Atrathe katayeshyemam. Itihasam puratanam. Puranjanasya charitam. Nibodha gadatho mama. Atrathe katayeshyemam. Itihasam puratanam. Puranjanasya charitam. Nibodha gadatho mama. Atrathe katayeshyemam. Itihasam puratanam. Puranjanasya charitam. Nibodha gadatho mama. In this connection, I wish to narrate an old history connected with the character of a king called Puranjan. Please try to hear me with great attention. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The great sage Narada Muni turned toward another topic, the history of King Puranjan. This is nothing but the history of King Prachinibarhishat, told in a different way. In other words, this is an allegorical presentation. The word Puranjan means one who enjoys in a body. This is clearly explained in the next few chapters, because a person entangled in material activities wants to hear story of material activities. Narada Muni turned to the topics of King Puranjan, who is none other than King Prachinibarhishat. Narada Muni did not, however, deprecate the value of performing sacrifices in which animals are sacrificed. Lord Buddha, however, directly rejected all animal sacrifices. Srila Jayadev Goswami has stated, Nindasi Jagyabadera Haha Shruti Jasam. The word Shruti Jatam indicates that in the Vedas, animal sacrifice is recommended. But Lord Buddha directly denied Vedic authority in order to stop animal sacrifice. Consequently, Lord Buddha is not accepted by the followers of the Vedas, because he does not accept the authority of the Vedas. Lord Buddha is depicted as agnostic or atheist. The great sage Narada cannot decry the authority of the Vedas, but he wanted to indicate to King Prachinibarhishat that the path of karmakanda is very difficult and risky. Foolish persons accept the difficult path of karmakanda for the sake of sense enjoyment, and those who are too much attached to sense enjoyment are called mudhas, rascals. It is very difficult for a mudha to understand the ultimate goal of life. In the propagation of the Krishna consciousness movement, we actually see that many people are not attracted because they are mudhas, engaged in fruitive activity. It is said, upadesho hi mukhanam prakopapaya na santaye hitopanishad. If good instructions are given to a foolish rascal, he simply becomes angry and turns against the instructions instead of taking advantage of them. Because Narada Muni's instructions, instead of taking advantage of them, because Narada Muni knew this very well, he indirectly instructed the king by giving him the history of his entire life. In order to wear a gold or diamond nose pin or earring, one has to pierce the ears or nose. Such pain endured for the sake of sense gratification is endured on the path of karma kanda, the path of fruit of activity. If one wishes to enjoy something in the future, he has to endure trouble in the present. If one wants to become a multimillionaire in the future and enjoy his riches, he has to work very hard at the present moment in order to accumulate money. This is karma kandiya. Those who are too much attached to the path undergo the risk anyway. Narada Muni wanted to show King Pratinibharhishat how one undergoes great troubles and miseries in order to engage in fruitive activity. A person who is very much attached to material activity is called Vishayi. A Vishayi is an enjoyer of Vishaya, which means eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Narada Muni is indirectly indicating through the story of King Puranjan that eating, sleeping, mating, and defending are troublesome and risky. The words itihasam, history, and puratanam, old, indicate that although a living entity lives within the material body, the history of the living entity within the material body is very old. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Anadi karamaphale padi bhavarnava jale horibare na deki upai. Due to my past fruitive activities, I have fallen into the water of material existence, and I cannot find any way to get out of it. Every living entity is suffering in this material existence from past activities. Therefore, everyone has a very old history. Foolish material scientists have manufactured their own theories of evolution, which are simply concerned with the material body. But actually, this is not the real evolution. The real evolution is the history of the living entity, who is Puranjan, living within the body. Sri Narada Muni will explain this evolutionary theory in a different way for the understanding of the same persons. We are reading today from Canto 4 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 25, entitled The Characteristics of King Puranjan, Text 9. Herein is the beginning of an elaborate narration given by Sri Narada Muni, which reveals the nature of an empowered soul's compassion to those who are bereft of the crest jewel of all goals of life, loving devotional service to Sri Krishna. King Pratinibharhishat was a man who, by material standards, was exceedingly enviable. He was the king of the world. Vast wealth, power, prestige. He had ten noble, healthy, pious, and faithful sons. A beautiful, chaste wife who was at his side, willing to do anything and everything for him. He had loyal subjects who accepted him like God himself. He had completely subdued all political rivals. He was stable, secure in his power, his wealth, his control. He was also living in another age where the duration of life was exceedingly long and problems with health practically did not even exist. He had everything. What more could a person want materially? Fine foods, fine clothes, fine jewels. Whatever he wanted was his, materially. He lived in such a royal palace that does not even close to exist in today's world. Yet Narada Muni felt terrible sympathy for this man because he did not have loving devotion to Krishna. Factually, he was a pious man and he was a religious man. He was obviously following the four regulative principles. He was not eating meat. He was not having illicit sex, taking intoxication or gambling. He was pious. And he was very religious. He was performing yajna after yajna after yajna according to the Vedas. And people honored him and respected him as a very, very religious person. Yet, Narada Muni, who had nothing but his veena and his one set of clothes, you have seen Narada Muni roaming about. He doesn't even carry a suitcase. VIP luggage, Samsonite, nothing. Just the clothes he's wearing in his veena. Such a renounced soul. He actually has nothing. It's not that he travels with nothing, but somewhere he has a big warehouse, go down, where he keeps all his dakshina. He has no possessions whatsoever. All he has is love of God. That is his only property. And his enthusiasm to chant the holy names of the Lord. Narada Muni Bhajai Vinajadikada Mananame. That is his wealth, the holy name. And he wants to share that wealth with the world because he knows it is the only real wealth. All other so-called wealth will perish by the imperceptible power of time. Everything is taken away from. And even while we have it, There's no pleasure in it. Mentally, there is. Mentally, there's pleasure in sense objects. But that pleasure is the source of a vast quantity of pain. To the degree we're attached to enjoying, to that same degree, suffering is inflicted upon us, inevitably. That is the nature of the world. So Narada Muni, his only possession is his love to chant the holy names of Krishna. And here he is, materially, a penniless beggar, coming in to the emperor of the universe, of the world, not the universe, the world. And he's looking around, seeing all the gold and all the silver, all the jewels, all the silk, all the beautiful ladies dressed in gowns for the pleasure of the king. And he's disgusted. He's disgusted by it all. What kind of a nonsense person is this king attached to all this? To have it and use it in Krishna's service, that is not disgusting. But to think I am the proprietor and I am the enjoyer, it is that consciousness that disgusts a Paramhamsa Vaishnava. So Narada Muni did not want him to simply renounce his kingdom. He wanted him to renounce his false sense of proprietorship. He wanted him to renounce the misconception that I am the enjoyer, and to take shelter of the only place that there is shelter, in the name of God. We were discussing yesterday how when a person is in this mudha state, Srila Prabhupada sometimes defines mudha as a foolish ass, not something King Prachinibharishat would be accustomed to hearing about himself. It was a fact. But Narada Muni did not tell him, King, you are a foolish ass. Because the king knows that you have to respect Brahmins. Surely he would have said, yes, your holiness, yes. But in his heart, he wouldn't have listened to another word he said. He would not be able to digest it. His ego's appetite would be spoiled to hear any more. So Narada Muni wanted to first give him a shock treatment, just to wake him up. And this is what most religions do. Because you have sinned, these are the hells that await you. The power and the wrath of God is just waiting to punish you. Look up in the sky, king. The king looked in the sky, and there he saw all the animals that were not perfectly sacrificed according to the religious traditions. They didn't attain human birth. They were simply murdered due to some technical flaw in the Brahmin's pronunciation or ritualistic performance. And they were there with iron horns ready to avenge Prachinibharishat. This was a reality. It wasn't that he turned on the Disney Channel of satellite TV, which is all phantasmagoria. This was the reality. He saw it right in the sky. He may have even recognized the animals. And they certainly recognized him. Very difficult. So he became serious. He was ready to hear. He was very, very eager now to hear. How can I counteract this destiny that is before me? How could you enjoy your kingdom if you know as soon as you die, this is what's in store for you? It's impossible. So Narada Muni, in his next step, which is the verse today, he wanted to have the full attention of the king through his whole narration, where he's just accepting everything he's saying without the defensive mechanism of his false ego being activated. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. When you approach Guru, you must submit yourself and inquire submissively with an eagerness to serve. If we have a challenging spirit, we can't digest what Guru is speaking. It's blocked by our ego. So this is the preliminary qualification, to be submissive, to hear submissively. Then the message enters deeply into our heart, where transformation takes place. So Narada Muni began to tell the story of Puranjan. He led into it in a very expert way. This is the intelligence of the compassionate Vaishnav. He knows that if I just tell it as it is, direct, the king will not be submissive to hear it. So I have to present it in a way that he becomes submissive, hears the message, and then in the conclusion he will realize what I'm really talking about. And by that time, it's too late. Hare Krishna. Just like Srila Prabhupada gives example. Sometimes if a child is restless, will not take the medicine. Does not want the medicine. And the mother fights and the child just locks the mouth shut and cries, "I hate you." So what does the mother do? She doesn't let the child die. She uses her intelligence. She grinds up the tablet, puts it in his halava, and said, "Oh, you don't like medicine, then you eat this halava." But it's mixed in such a way that the flavor, the sight, the smell, nothing. It's just halava. Harivo. And the child eats it, very happy. And all the effect of the medicine takes place without him knowing. This is exactly what Narada Muni has done. He has created a story about, he's going to tell King Prachini Barhishat exactly how he's in Maya, why he's in Maya, and what his destiny is going to be because of his illusion and his attachments. But he's telling it all in the story about somebody else. Srila Prabhupada explains here, materialistic people love to hear about other materialistic people. If you like sense gratification, you love to hear about other people who are doing very, very good types of sense gratification. That's what the whole entertainment industry is about. The magazines, the most popular magazines are these people magazines, gossip magazines. And it's usually about people who have big, big sense gratification. Movie stars, wealthy people, how they're enjoying. And everyone wants to enjoy, so they're fascinated by hearing about how others are enjoying. People live boring lives, so they like to watch a cinema full of adventure and heroism and romance, because, you know, their life is just, you know, on the trains, going to work, on the trains back, and children nagging and wife nagging and husbands just complaining, and just turn on the cinema. I want to see something that I want to be. Yes? That's what it's about. We're just bored with life. We want to see those things that we really want in our own life. If we see other people doing it, it brings us some relief. But if it's somebody we know well, then there's a problem. Then it brings envy. But if it's just somebody on a screen, then we don't mind. That is human nature. Novels, books, so many books about fantasy and romance, about adventure and heroism and wars. Because life is boring. Without Krishna, life is really boring. So people are addicted to these things. So a preacher is a person who, according to time, place, and circumstance, uses his or her intelligence to somehow or other reach the heart of the audience. So King Puranjan is a materialistic enjoyer who is somewhat religious. Let me tell him the story about a materialistic enjoyer who's somewhat religious. But even better than him. And he began. He's beginning here his narration of King Puranjan. This is compassion. His goal is to change the king's heart. His goal is to somehow or other bring the king to the conclusion that his life is futile without Krishna. The essence of preaching is compassion. Thakur Bhaktivinod, in that beautiful song, Kabe Habe Bolo Se Din Amar, when, oh when, will that day be mine? When my attachment to the holy name will increase, my offenses will evaporate. The last line of that song, he expounds the sacred principle that the essence of religion is to show compassion to those who are suffering. The essence of religion is to show compassion to those who are suffering. Why is that the essence? Because Krishna loves every living being. Krishna descends into this world again and again out of his love for those who are suffering. Religion means to love God, to serve God. In the spiritual world, we simply participate in the Lord's Leela. But in this material world, we become a part of the Lord's mission. His mission of compassion. Krishna tells in Gita, there's no one more dear to me than one who preaches this message. So compassion is the natural state of a pure heart. And compassion is to see how people who are bereft of the great treasure of love of God in their life, what they're missing. Even we may not have it, but we know that that's the only true fulfillment. Some preachers have that love and want to share it. Others have knowledge of that love and have seen or heard of people who have that love, and they want to share that on behalf of the great souls. But how to actually change people's heart? A Vaishnav does not preach because through preaching you become famous, you get disciples, you get wealth, you get power, influence. Those are all disturbances. Those are all material entanglements. A devotee preaches simply because he feels for the suffering of someone who is bereft of Krishna, trying to enjoy the illusory nature of the Lord without understanding the substance of the Lord's all-attractive form. Whole material existence is but an energy of Krishna. And Krishna declares himself Dukalayam Ashashvatam. It's a place of misery. Everything is temporary. You can't really be happy here. Being happy in this world, first verse of Bhagavatam, it is a perverted reflection. It is like a mirage, chasing after the illusion of a mirage, taking what is not to be what is, and forgetting our real need, the origin of everything that exists, Krishna, who is waiting for us at all times, everywhere. He's waiting for us. He's calling for us from within our heart. As we become purified, we hear his call directly. But in the impure state, we've been ignoring it, neglecting it for so many births and deaths, we cannot hear anything. It is obscured. We are so preoccupied by material desires and longings, we just can't hear Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is so inconceivably compassionate. We're not listening to him, who is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, birth after birth after birth after birth, right beside us within the core of our heart, calling for us. And we're unwilling to even listen, to even turn in his direction. Upanishads describe like two birds. One is calling him back. The other is so busy trying to eat the fruits in the tree, he doesn't even acknowledge that his best friend is right next to him on the same little branch. That is our position. Sometimes the fruit is sweet and we enjoy, but other times inevitable bitter fruit and we suffer. But Krishna's waiting. He's calling. You can't hear me from within? You're not willing to listen? Then I'll speak from without. He appears in his avatar to speak. He sends his messengers Chaitya Guru speaks through the spiritual master, speaks through the parampara and all the writings of the acharyas. When the Guru speaks, it is the voice of the Lord in your heart speaking. Prabhupada's books is Krishna in your heart speaking to you. When the Vaishnavas repeat the word of the acharyas, that's Krishna speaking through you, through their mouths, to you. As long as we repeat the message as it is, without adulteration, it's Krishna's words. How many people are speaking Krishna's words in a way that our ears can easily hear if we just give some attention? He's given us Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, such mercy. And most stubborn souls still will not listen. So Krishna creates arrangements where there are sufferings. And all the sufferings of material existence are ultimately to just sober us up and listen to what he's trying to tell us. We're strangers in a foreign land. We're in a wilderness of desert. Our real home is to realize that we are part and parcel of Krishna. We are the eternal servants of Krishna. To surrender with love to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada would often explain that you inherit naturally the wealth of the father. He quotes from the acharyas that really, if you're a devotee, the only thing you have to do to inherit the wealth of your father Krishna is just live. Correct? If your father is a wealthy man and you are his loyal, obedient son, then you're the heir of all his wealth. What do you have to do to inherit it? All you have to do is just go on living. You don't have to be something special or something great. All you have to do is just go on living and not abandon him. If you abandon him, then he'll take you out of his will. We have seen that with many devotees' lives, especially brahmacharis. But usually after some years, they put them back in. Sometimes they give him the whole thing. Just use it for yourself. Don't give it to the temple. So if you're just an obedient son, following the directions of the father, not rejecting your father, then all you have to do is just live patiently. And in due course of time, the entire inheritance will be yours. Similarly, when we become a devotee, Achyuta Gotra. Some years ago, I went with one wonderful devotee to Rameshwaram. We had recently gone to Badrik Ashram, and we brought water from Alaknanda. And it's considered very auspicious to take the water from Badrinath and bathe Shankar in Rameshwar with the same water. So it's quite a troublesome auspicious activity. But it's very special. So the two of us were offering the water. And the pujaris they will not offer it without some very special technical ritual. And before they'll offer it on your behalf, they ask, what is your gotra? So the Indian gentleman, he knew his gotra. As far as I know, everyone knows something about what their gotra is. But then he was thinking, what am I going to say? Outside of India, nobody knows what their gotra is. Of course, a Jewish person, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. It's my gotra. The Abraham gotra. If I said that, they would have kicked me out of the temple. So, like, you can't lie because we're sitting right in front of the deity. I can't lie in front of the deity. And if I told that I didn't know or something else, they would have rejected. So it wasn't even a question. Because I knew my gotra. Srila Prabhupada told me my gotra. He said, when you become a devotee, you enter into achyuta gotra. When you renounce the things of this world and surrender to Krishna and take initiation in Guru Parampara, that initiation enters, you enter into achyuta gotra. That means you are officially in the spiritual family of God Himself, directly and personally, through Parampara. That is the mercy of the spiritual masters. Srila Prabhupada went to the Western world. Nobody even heard of gotra, what to speak of, know what it is, or what their particular specifics are. But he gave them all formal entrance into achyuta gotra. But there's a difference between the achyuta gotra and the kashyapa gotra, or the Bharadvaj Gotra of this world. Because one is a bodily conception. At the time of death, that's all gone. You renounce your Gotra. Yes? Time of death, you renounce Gotra. And then you might take your next birth in a pig or spider Gotra. Or in a goat Gotra. So we don't know. It's all gone. But the entrance of initiation into achyuta gotra, it's not on the bodily platform, it's on the spiritual platform. Therefore, it is eternal. Even when you die, when you take your vows with solemn sincerity, the Guru Parampara accepts responsibility for your soul. Krishna explains, Neha Bikramanasusti Pratyavayo Nividyate. Even if there's no loss in Krishna consciousness, even if you do die without becoming perfect, Guru and Krishna, you are theirs now. They will come back. In some transcendental way, they will come back to help you continue the path back home, back to Godhead. If you do not abandon them, they will never abandon you. That is achyuta gotra. The eternal family identity of the soul with Krishna and his devotees. So when I said, achyuta gotra, my dear friend was very happy. And the priest gave me a special garland because he knew what it meant. So we have come into the achyuta gotra. What does that mean? Radha Gopinath is our father and mother, eternally. And all the wealth, bliss of their leelas in the spiritual world is your inheritance. The material world, it's all under Durga Devi's supervision. So it's Krishna's, but indirect. But Krishna's direct, personal abode, the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, for those in Gaudiya Vaishnav line, Goloka Vrindavan, Govardhan, Jamuna, the Ras Mandala, all of the Kalpa Briksha trees, the dust, each pebble has greater value than all the jewels and wealth in all the heavenly planets, in all the universes. One grain of dust of Goloka Vrindavan, it can fulfill all your spiritual desires. The eternal pastimes of the Lord and the eternal abode of the Lord. It is all your inheritance. All you have to do is just live. And you get it. What does it mean to live? That means to carry on in your devotional service. Carry on hearing the glories of the Lord. Regularly, carrying on chanting the holy names of the Lord as attentive as possible with discipline. Carry on guarding against the 10 offenses and rendering service in a spirit of humility to Guru, Vaishnava, and Krishna. Carry on in a spirit of compassion, helping the Guru and the parampara deliver other souls with the same fortune you have received. All we have to do is just go on in our lives, following the principles carefully, and you will attain the ultimate inheritance of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, where you have all the opulences, sweet opulences of the spiritual world as yours. This is what Narada Muni wants to give to King Prachini Barhishat. And he is determined. He is determined to have him accept it. And he's using all of his God-given intelligence to somehow or other get this message into his heart. That is what book distribution is about. It's Krishna's words coming through the Paramahamsa compassionate Vaishnav Prabhupada's mouth. He dictated his translations and purports, and they were transcribed by his loyal, faithful, deputed disciples and published. And when we're distributing, we're actually giving Krishna to these people in the most palatable and powerful form. When we're speaking from these books, we're giving Krishna to these people. The story of Narada Muni's expert love and compassion is throughout the Vedic literatures. He expertly, somehow or other, got people to surrender to Krishna. You know the story of Valmiki Muni. He was a highway robber and a hunter. Hare Krishna. Did you ever, when we go on our yatras, sometimes there's dacoits with sticks, guns, knives. Do you remember we went to Ramkeli? We had no guards, so devotees pretended to be very highly skilled Kshatriya guards, sticks and turbans, just so the dacoits would at least think that we have protection. It's very lucky that they didn't attack. But of course, when there's 1,000 of us and 20 of them, what do we have to fear? We just jump on them. I learned this from Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu. Just jump on them. If you have the numbers, only fear is your problem. So, but to go up to these people in the middle of the night and preach to them, that's another thing. That's Narada Muni's expertise. He went right up to Valmiki Muni. Revealed to him, sobered him up, what his destiny is. Told him, just chant the name of Rama. He couldn't. He was too sinful. His mouth was too sinful to even pronounce the two syllables Rama. Can you imagine what a person he was? Oh, you're very much devoted to killing people. So chant the name of death, Mara. Yes, so he chanted Mara. Mara, Maram, Maram, Maram. Somehow or other, Narada Muni got him to chant the name of Ram. So expert, so intelligent. To Mugrari, the hunter also. So expertly, intelligently he did it. He preached to Prahlad when he was just an embryo in the womb, so he had no predispositions. Yes? His mind, he had no conceptions of reality. It's before he even had the power of reason. His whole consciousness, his whole heart was filled with Krishna's words. That's all he knew. And he got such a higher taste in the womb, even after he came out of the womb, he did not want to learn anything else. His teachers were masters at the subjects, Sanda and Amarka. Even at IIT, they don't have teachers like that. The seminal sons of Sukracharya? You know how much they would get paid in a university today? They're brilliant. They know the subject. They know how to present the subject in fantastic, fascinating, authoritative ways. They're powerful. Hiranyakashipu sending his son to school when he's the ruler of the universe? You know he's going to have the best teachers in the entire universe who scientifically have mastered the art of captivating the attention and giving the message, convincing, most advanced learning techniques. Prahlad, he was only 5. He didn't even want to know anything else. Because he already heard from Narada Muni about the beautiful qualities of Krishna. Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, the philosophy of this of the material world and how to disentangle oneself from it and take shelter of the all-merciful, all-beautiful Krishna. This is the expertise of Narada Muni. He simply doesn't give up. When someone becomes the object of his mercy, He's there for that person no matter what. Somehow or other, he's going to take you back to Godhead. That is why we have chosen to be in his disciplic succession. He and his representatives, they are committed to take us back to Godhead somehow or other. And they will if we just stay, if we're just sincere. Prabhupada said, just be sincere, I'll take you back to Godhead. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, just go on following my instructions, you will go back to Godhead. But we have to be sincere. That is the quality. We have to be sincere. We have to try to be humble and follow. Today is the appearance day of one such great Acharya. On the day of Vijayadashami is the appearance day of Sri Madhvacharya, who is one of the great descendants of the parampara of Narada Muni. Lord Brahma, the Adi Guru of our parampara, after Radha and Krishna. His first disciple is Narada Muni, his own son. Narada was previously the son of a simple maidservant. But because of his service attitude, that's all he had, was a service attitude. He was not learned. He was not from a high birth. He was just a small child from a maidservant's family. That indicates a sudra environment. But he was sincere to serve. And because of his sincerity to serve, he received the heartfelt blessings of the great rishis. And that made him eager. Those blessings caused him to be eager to hear from them. He gave his life. And in his next birth, he became the first disciple of Lord Brahma. And he became a great preacher. The Shaktivesh avatar of Vishnu, Srila Vyasadeva, accepted Narada Muni as his guru. That is the glory of Narada Muni. Narada Muni revealed his most divine opulences just recently. Have you heard? Just recently, he revealed his most munificent opulence. He appeared as Srivas Thakur in Silate area, settled in Navadweep. And there is the personal associate of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He filled the world with the transcendental congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna and Radharani in the combined form, He was weeping and crying to see Srivasa's love when his son died and he didn't want to disturb the Lord's ecstasy in kirtan. He was weeping uncontrollably, Lord Chaitanya. He said, myself and Nityananda Prabhu are your property. The Lord said about him, the goddess of fortune is your maidservant because you have surrendered to my holy name. And herein, in the context of the story we are narrating, Shaktivaishavatar, Vedavyas, the compiler of all the original Vedic literatures, he chose this Narada Muni to be his guru. Even by his own yoga maya potency appeared to be an illusion until Narada Muni cleared the illusion. And the disciple of Vedavyas was Madhvacharya. He is in this line. And Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, God Himself, the original form, also wanted to be in this line. There was a selection of various paramparas for him to come. But Lord Chaitanya wanted to be the menial servant of the parampara of Narada, Brahma and Vyas, and Madhvacharya. Sripad Madhvacharya is one of our forefathers spiritually, and very prominent at that. He was responsible for performing the greatest work of dismissing the illusion of impersonalistic Mayavad philosophy. From his earliest childhood, he was strongly refuting these misconceptions, which had practically engulfed the entirety of the Vedic civilization. There were some Vaishnavas, Yamunacharya, Ramanujacharya, but the vast majority of all the public, as is today, is under the misconception that ultimately the Absolute is not sentient. The temporary arrangement the Lord makes to deliver us is to take a form and a name and perform pastimes. But ultimately, the Lord is the all-pervading one beyond name, form, qualities. And so hum, I am that. I am you. We are all the undifferentiated absolute truth, temporarily in illusion. This misconception is so very contrary to the principle of the cultivation of loving service. As long as that misconception has any traces in your heart, it's a tremendous impediment to developing eternal service attitude to Krishna, to Vishnu. So Madhvacharya, he understood that there was no philosopher who sufficiently defeated this misconception. And Lord Chaitanya, who came to give the world Krishna prema, pradayate, he wanted to be in line with Madhvacharya in his sampradaya. Because unless If we want to reach the spiritual world, and we're faced by a dense jungle of Mayavad, misconception, we have to cut it down. We have to cut it down and go through it. So yes, better than anybody, he cut it down. He carved the path. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took that path that Madhvacharya cut down and performed Harinam Sankirtan through that path and invited everyone to follow him back home, back to Godhead, to Goloka Vrindavan. So today we are very grateful for this special benediction that we have been given by Prabhupada's compassionate sacrifice, entrance into the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Shall I speak a few words about Madhvacharya? I'm sorry it's late. Speak a few words. But sometimes few words become less few and more words. In the South Kannada district, which is sacred to Lord Parasuram, when he appeared, that is where he resided. In fact, after he conquered all Kshatriyas, he gave all of his wealth to Kashyapa Muni and other great rishis. But he wanted a place for his bhajan. So he actually moved the ocean back. And that tract of land that he personally created is glorified as Parasuram Kshetra. Most of Kerala, actually from south of Bombay, down the coast that way, is considered like that. But that South Kannada district is the specific places where there are kuns and hills and that Parasuram personally performed his leelas. So in that special place, there was a Brahmin. His name was Madhyageha. And he had one daughter. But he was very eager for a son. For several reasons. One is he wanted the name of his Brahmin family dynasty. He was from the Shivali Brahmin community. He wanted that to carry on. And also, there was just an indescribable calling in his heart, which he may not have known, but it was a divine call for him to give birth to a son. There was a glorious festival when two of his sons were born, but they both died when they were infants. So he was so eager. He was living in Pajaka Kshetra, a very, very small little village of Brahmins at the time. Every day he would walk all the way to Udupi. In those days, the principal temple was Ananteshwar Mandir. And he would perform puja and prayers every single day, praying to the Lord to grant him a son. He was also performing very serious austerities, fasting. He performed this tapasya, fasting, going all the way by foot to Udupi, many, many kilometers, coming all the way back, spending so much, making offerings. 12 years. There was still not a son. But his devotion, his fervor, his determination, he never gave up hope. One day during a big festival, it may have been Makara Sankranti, one of the pujaris climbed a column to the top, just outside the temple, and proclaimed an announcement that stunned everybody. Anandeshwar has personally spoken through his heart. He said that Vayudev, one of the principal devatas and dear devotee of Vishnu, will very soon take his birth right here in our locale to deliver mankind. Everyone was cheering. Madhyageha Bhat, he knew in his heart that he was talking about a son that would be born to him. His heart was dancing in jubilation. Very soon, his wife was pregnant. How the family was anticipating this glorious personality who was prophesied to appear as their own child. It was on this day of Dasera, the day of Ram's victory over Ravana, that Sri Madhvacharya appeared in this world. Within the Madhva Sampradaya, it is very convincingly understood that he is avatar of Vayu. That means he is avatar of Bhima, and of the same tattva as Hanuman. These are his descendants. These are his tattva previous births. Technically, they say that he was actually Bhima, and Hanuman was his brother. So he was born, and all the 32 attributes of a Mahapurusha were very clearly visible on his beautiful golden form. His family, who were great devotees of Krishna, named him Vasudev. In the Madhava Bijai, there is many beautiful stories, all considered and accepted as perfectly authorized by our disciplic succession. If you want to hear many of them, we gave lecture in Udupi during our last yatra for many hours describing.
I think it's probably on some CD somewhere in Sachi Kumar's Go Down. But a few words on this auspicious day. When he was a little baby, very small baby, his mother had to go for some errands. So she left little Vasudev in the care of his sister. Vasudev, as soon as his mother came out of sight, he started crying. Howling cry. And the mother had already left, and here's the sister. What to do? My brother's crying. She didn't know what to do with him. So the family had horse gram. They had a big mountain of it. And she just thought maybe if he takes one little piece of it, he might stop crying. So he took a piece of it. It appears he liked it. He just started eating handful after handful, little baby hands. He was eating handful after handful. The mountain was probably five times his size. The sister was trying to stop him, and she couldn't move him. He was so determined. He ate the whole mountain. And he was crying the whole time. He didn't stop crying till the last granule was devoured. Now even a team of grown bullocks could never have digested that. According to Madhava Vijay. The little baby, he ate it all. Where did it go? Sister was bewildered. Immediately she told the mother. So the mother picked up her son and looked at him. They had him under very, very intensive observation. For several days, and there wasn't even a hiccup. There wasn't the slightest reaction. He just ate it. He was just smiling like this. He was satisfied. So from his infancy, he manifested his identity as Bhima, who is Brikodar, which means he likes to eat prasad. On another occasion, little baby Vasudev, they couldn't find him all day. Actually, one nice story. I'm remembering little by little. Just after his birth, for some days the mother remains in one place. That is the tradition. As soon as she was in that state of cleansing and health, immediately her and her husband went to an Andeshwar temple. They walked all the way. Just to offer the child to the deity. Because the father performed 12 years of tapasya in front of that deity. And he considered it was the Lord's mercy that this son has been born. So naturally he wanted to offer the child to the Lord. They were on their way back with some other family members, and it was late at night. They were walking through the jungle. At the midnight hour, in the darkness of night, a horrible thing took place. A ghostly spirit attacked the crowd. And their greatest fear was he was going to kill the infant baby. because the baby's usually helpless.
A horrific voice of this spirit spoke to them, thundering. I have come to haunt you. I have come to kill this infant, but I can't. This is a divine avatar of Vayu. I cannot kill him. So I will go away. It was declared.
One day, little Basudev, they were looking all over for him. He wasn't anywhere around. They couldn't find him. They were in tremendous anxiety. He was their life and soul. He was the family to them. They were looking, searching, asking, inquiring. They couldn't find him anywhere. From sunrise to sunset, he had just disappeared. And then just about sunset time, this gigantic bull, the type of bull nobody wants to walk down the same street as, gigantic bull came walking by, and they happened to notice, as he walked by, there was little Vasudev hanging from his tail. From sunrise to sunset, he was just hanging from this dangerous bull's tail, smiling and laughing the whole time. He was not an ordinary child. When he grew a little older, small child, his father bought a team of bullock for plowing his agricultural fields. He bought it on loan. The person who he purchased it from came to the house demanding the payment for the loan on that day. But there was a problem. Madhya Geha had no money. He actually had nothing. So in those days, creditors, they had their ways of playing on your traditions. He knew that if he comes as a guest to their house, the father of the house cannot eat until his guest eats. Isn't that our culture? Whether you know it or not, that is our culture. If a guest comes to your house, the master of the house, the family can, but the master of the house, he's not allowed to eat. It's considered irreligious until after fully satisfying his guest. So the man actually came to his house and sat right in his doorway and said, I'm fasting until you pay me, which means you cannot eat until you pay me. He probably ate a big feast before coming. So he sat there, and it was just dinner time. Whole family, little Basudev comes to his father, says, you know, mother is calling you. Prasad is on the table, come. He said, no, you eat, family eats, I cannot eat. He said, well, why not? We always take as a family together. Why are you not coming? He said, no, today I'm not hungry, and you're always hungry, why not? So finally he had to tell him. He said, actually, this man, I owe him money, and he's sitting at my doorstep, and I can't eat until I feed him, and I can't feed him because he won't eat until I give him money, and I have no money. So little Vasudev smiled, and he went out another door and came around and saw that man. His father didn't see any of this. His father was inside. His father was inside holding his head, wondering what to do, how to pay this man. This is a crisis. So little Vasudev said, come with me. He was so beautiful. He was such a beautiful personality. He just charmed the heart of this man. The man came just next to the house. There was a tamarind tree. And little Vasudev picked up some tamarind seeds. And the man saw them in his hand. And he said, here, take this. Boy, the smile, so much captivated. He wanted to play with this little boy. So he opened his, he accepted the tamarind seeds. Then he looked in his hands, and the tamarind seeds were transformed into gold coins. Exactly to the paisa of what he owed Vasudev's father. It was a miracle. He was very happy. Came knocking on the door. Madhyageha, but I still don't have any money, I'm sorry. I said, what? You just gave me your little son. He paid your debt. Now you can feed me and I'll go. He told him exactly the story. When he was only 5 years old, his father personally gave him the sacred thread ceremony with Gayatri Mantra. And he was studying in school, but he excelled so much. These schools were not algebra and computer education. It was all scripture. This was a Brahmin community. They were very, very deeply learning how to study the scriptures. And his guru would give the conventional understanding of the verses of the Vedas, which was usually either some kind of Mayavad or some kind of Karmakanda. And his little five-year-old student would start correcting him. Very humble, wasn't challenging. He was so humble that the teacher actually was pleased with what he was saying. And when it was actually time for the graduation, little Vasudev had already explained every verse that the teacher got all wrong from the point of view of the Bhagavat Sampradaya. That every verse is simply, ultimately glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the path of bhakti, or pure unalloyed devotion. So the teacher actually became a great devotee under the influence of his little student. Now little Vasudev, when he was 12, just about 12 years old, maybe 11 or so, he had this burning desire in his heart to renounce the world, become a sannyasi. So he wanted to search for a sannyas guru. He was 11 years old. And he found, just outside of Udupi, the math of Achutya Preksha. He was a very, very great scholar, and he was highly honored by sadhus and the lay people alike as a very, very pure renunciate, very disciplined, very good character, very learned. So this child, Vasudeva, approached him and told him, I want to be a brahmachari, then take sannyas as your student. Achyuta Pariksha was always praying for a glorious student who could actually be his successor. But he found none who had that quality that he immediately saw in Vasudeva. So he began to teach him. Same thing. He would preach according to Shankaracharya's Bhasya. And little Vasudeva would say, actually, teacher, can I speak something? Yes, yes. Can I share with you my understanding of this? Yes, yes. And he would quote from the Shastras, and he would completely dismiss the relevancy of Shankar's commentary and establish another commentary. And he did it with such humility, with such respect and such devotion. All the teacher could do is just listen with wonder and accept it. Soon, in just a matter of a couple months in the mat, little Vasudeva was giving lectures. And crowds of people were coming to hear this small child speak. It was incredible. Such logic, such conviction, such mastery over the scriptures, and such pure devotion. Achyuta Parikshacharya was so proud of him, he decided to anoint him his successor. The ceremony was held with an abhishekam and all sorts of other rituals to consecrate little Vasudeva as the next acharya of the mat. At that time, Achyuta Pariksha awarded Vasudeva the title Anantirtha. Meanwhile, Madhyageha Bhatt, he was wondering, along with his wife and daughter, where's Vasudeva? He didn't even tell us he was going. He's just gone. Where is he? He was searching everywhere. And he found him at Achyuta Pariksha's mat. So he said, son, please come home. Son said, father, I am going to take sannyas. He was 11 years old. How many parents here have an 11-year-old child? Does anyone here? Do you like him to take sannyas? It's quite premature to ask this question, I think. He's 11-year-old. And he's telling his father, I want to take sannyas. Now, immediately. Father was shocked, heartbroken. You know, the harder it is to get something, the more you're attached to it when you have it. He spent 12 years of fasting, of performing tapasya, of worshiping the deity, just to get a son who would have children and carry on his dynasty. And here, his son's only 11 years old, and he says, I'm going to take sannyas. He said, no, you're not going to take sannyas. You're coming home with me, son. He said, no, I'm not coming home. I'm a brahmachari. I'm not coming home. So his father tried chastising him. But how do you chastise Madhvacharya? It's not a very promising perspective.
the little boy just scripturally defeated everything he said, logically defeated every word he spoke. So finally, he became very humble, pleading with him, pleading, please come home, you're breaking my heart. And ultimately, he was so desperate to bring his little son home, he fell on his hands and knees and actually prostrated himself at the feet of his son, weeping incessantly, begging him to come home. And Vasudev replying to this particular episode, told his father, when a senior personality, like a father, offers obeisances to a junior personality as a son, that can only take place if the son is a sannyasi in the renounced order. Confirmation, I will take sannyas. Father, he didn't know what to say. So he went home, discussed it with his mother, and they were besides themselves in utter grief. It was devastating. They saw him as their little son. It doesn't matter how learned he is. He's our son. So he was going back to somehow or other bring him home. But Achyuta Preksha was on a journey to a holy place, and he brought little Vasudev Ananda Tirtha with him. They were in a forest near a village. The father was desperately trying to catch up to them. And just after crossing a river, he found them. And he came before his son and was pleading with him, begging him, please come home, please come home. But he was firm in his conviction. So ultimately the father performed the last desperate strategy which most brahmacharis have seen in their parents. If you don't come home with me, I will immediately commit suicide. Hare Krishna. I will take my life and you will be the cause of my death. So little Vasudev, he was a brahmachari. He took off his dhoti, he tore it into a kopan of a sannyasi, put it on and said, go ahead, do it. That didn't work. So, should I continue? Father, he said, all right, I'll discuss it with your mother. If your mother gives permission, then only do you have the blessings to take sannyas. Only if your mother gives permission. And then he said, how could you do this? You're our only son. We have no others. We're getting old. So you know what little Vasudev said? All right, I will wait till you have another son. Then do you give blessings for me to take sannyas? Father did not give blessings, and mother did not give blessings. Madhya Geha Bhatta went home alone and found very soon his wife was pregnant. About 9 months later,
a son was born.
As soon as that child took birth,
little Vasudev came home. First time he came home since living in the Brahmacharya ashram. And approached his mother.
She was given the power of attorney by the father.
Because it's more difficult to convince mothers of such things as sannyas. And little Vasudev says, now you have a son. Very nice, nice son. So now give me your blessings to take sannyas. And she said, no, I will not give you blessings to take sannyas. So Vasudev said, all right, I will give you two choices. You could make the choice. And whatever you choose, I stand by carrying out this arrangement.
Do not give me blessings to take sannyas, and I vow you will never, ever, ever see my face again as long as you live.
Give me blessings to take sannyas, and you can come and see me anytime you like. Her blessings were not the slightest bit heartfelt. But she gave her blessings. So he reported back to Achyuta Pariksha. By this time he was 12 years old. It is said that the sannyas ceremony was held at the Anandeshwar Mandir.
Large crowds of people came for this very auspicious occasion.
The charm of everyone's heart, little Vasudev, is going to take sannyas. The successor of the prominent mat of Achyuta Pariksha is today going to take sannyas. It was a joyous festive occasion.
And when they saw little Vasudev dressed in the saffron kopan of a sannyasi, holding the danda, performing the purificatory rituals of sannyas, it was something that no one ever forgot in their entire lives. After taking the vows, dressed as a little sannyasi, saffron kopan, danda, he was effulgent like the sun. He was ecstatic. His Guru Maharaj gave him the sannyas title, Purna Pragya. And he circumambulated the temple. And everyone was giving him dakshina to present to his Guru Maharaj. Just after taking sannyas, he was 12 years old. He wanted to go visit the Ganga. But his Guru Maharaj was thinking, Ganga's very far, that's North India. You're a small boy, I'm worried about you. So he conceded to allow him to take a tour of South India. This little boy was traveling as a sannyasi, preaching in the various provinces of southern India. He was preaching the Vaishnava philosophy of Dvaita, that the constitutional position of the jiva is eternally part and parcel of the Supreme. Never become the Supreme. Eternally the servant of the Supreme. That true mukti is eternal love for God. Never merging into the existence of God. He considered and preached
that this grossly misleading misinterpretation of the Vedas, based exclusively on indirect reasoning, completely contradicts the direct, literal words of the Vedic literature. And he was so logical, so authoritative, and so convinced that even great scholars, even elderly, senior, learned scholars were surrendering to become the disciple of 12-year-old Purnaprajñatirtha. Incredible. He was preaching so powerfully, even some of the leaders of the Sringeri Math, which is not very far away, they were becoming threatened. They were losing vast quantities of their following to follow this little sannyasi boy. One of the most senior scholars of the Sringeri Math came to challenge him and was utterly defeated. He wanted to visit the person who he accepted as his eternal guru in his heart, Vyasadeva. He was such a devotee of the Vedic literatures. He considered Vedavyasa to be his spiritual master. Ultimately, he wanted personal initiation in the sense of instruction and acceptance into the sampradaya of Vyasadeva. By this time, he had many followers. He and several of his followers walked all the way from Udupi to Badrikashram. In the Badrinath temple, which is very ancient, he spent hours and hours all alone in front of the deity, just praying to Lord Badri Vishal Vishnu that he may get the personal darshan of Vedavyas so he could surrender his life to him. In fact, he stayed in the deity room all night long. And one of his very closest disciples, who was like his personal secretary, Satyatirtha, one he already had given him sannyas, he was just outside the door, and he could actually hear the prayers of his guru. And he could hear, after hours and hours, days of prayer, he heard the voice of Badrinath giving blessings to Madhvacharya to go to the ashram of Vedavyas, which is not in the Badrinath that any human being could attain. He resides in Adi Badri, which is high in the steepest snow-laden slopes of the Himalayas, unpassable by man. After receiving those blessings, he was to commence his journey. Satyatirtha said, "Gurudev, I want to follow you. I will go with you. I must be there to help you." "You're going to help me? You'll never make it. It's very difficult." I said, no, if you are going, I must be there to assist you. All right, you come. He was walking so fast through snow. He was just walking just with a copan. And Satyatirtha was running and running and running, and days were going by and there was no food. And Satyatirtha was utterly exhausted, just ready to drop dead practically. And he was the assistant to help. So Advacharya was full of life and energy and enthusiasm. He was going for his guru's darshan. He looked back at Satyatirtha. By that time, they already traveled for days. How would he even get back? It was a difficult situation. He couldn't go on any longer. He couldn't go forward. He couldn't go backward. He was exhausted in the snow. So Sripad Madhvacharya just smiled at him, said, "You return to Badrinath." And then he, with his hand, he went like this. And the breeze of his hand lifted him up and carried him all the way back to the temple steps of Badrinath. That is blessing. He continued his journey and entered into an area which was, it was a celestial, divine, spiritual, it was a spiritual abode of Vyasadeva in the Himalayas. There was beautiful trees, rivers. It was a divine atmosphere. The greatest sages and rishis were gathered around Vedavyasa as he was giving his own commentaries of the scriptures that he wrote. It was in that most auspicious setting that Madhvacharya offered his obeisances and surrendered his life to Vedavyasa. Vedavyasa personally instructed him. On the basis of his instructions, Madhvacharya wrote commentary on Bhagavad Gita according to the commentary of what he heard from his guru, Vedavyasa. He presented his commentary to Vedavyasa, and Vedavyasa gave his full blessings. Give it to the world. Srila Vyasadeva accepted Madhvacharya as his own disciple. He returned. Many wonderful instances took place on their way down. They did not go directly to Udupi. They went to many places on the way. And some of the greatest scholars, Sobhana Bhatt, Sama Shastri, in the southern Indian provinces, these were two of the greatest scholars in the Brahmin community. They were elderly men. And they approached Madhva, because Madhvacharya was preaching. Throngs of people were coming. And it was such a revolutionary explanation compared to what people were hearing. So naturally they came and they listened to him for some time, and with all of their intellectual might, they challenged him. And with great respect and humility, he defeated everything they said and absolutely convinced them that devotional service is the only true path to the highest goal, pure love for Krishna. They became his disciples. I think one was Padmanabh Tirtha, the other was Narahari Tirtha. They both took sannyas from Madhvacharya. And then they started preaching on his behalf. One even became a king. Sannyasi king for some time. It's a good story, actually. Prabhupada tells it. So, when he returned to Udupi, he used to go to the shore of the ocean. And there he would sing beautiful prayers to Lord Krishna. One day while he was there, a cargo ship was sailing from Dwarka to the southern provinces of India. And a storm came and the ship was stuck and about to sink. The captain of the ship was desperate. He was crying out for help, but who could help when your ship is about to sink? But he saw this effulgent sannyasi sitting in the sand on the shore. And just with a wave of his hand, the storm disappeared. And the ship was rescued. So naturally he came there to show his gratitude to this young sannyasi who saved his life and his fortune. He had much wealth in the form of his wares that he was going to sell. He said, "I'll give you any of my riches. What would you like? You saved me." He said, "I do not want anything." "But where are you coming from?" "From Dwarka." "Ah, you are coming from Dwarka. Do you have any Gopi Chandan?" He said, "Yes, I do." He took two big blocks of Gopi Chandan and he used it just as weights to balance the ship. He put one block of Gopi Chandan. He took the Gopi Chandan off the ship. It was very, very heavy. Many men came and took it off. When they put it to the ground, Madhva was looking. And one of the pieces of Gopi Chandan cracked open. And inside was beautiful deity of Udupi Krishna. When Krishna was living in Dwarka, Yasoda Mai, she had the supreme fortune of seeing child Krishna's Bal Leela, which is all attractive. Devaki, his mother in Dwarka, for 12 years and 8 months, she didn't get to see Krishna's pastimes. The first night of his appearance, he went to Gokul. So Devaki prayed to Krishna, "Can I see these childhood pastimes that Yashoda saw?" So he actually performed those pastimes. And Rukmini, his principal queen, she actually was watching. And she was so fascinated. Her heart melted with such love that she told Krishna, I want to worship you in that form." So Krishna manifested a deity of Balgopal that was Rukmini's own personal Ishtadev. But at the time of Krishna's Leela of disappearing from this world, much of Dwarka went under the sea. So somehow or other that deity, which was very, very much famous amongst Vaishnavas, had disappeared from anyone's sight. It entered into the Gopi Talab, the kund where all Gopi Chandan comes from. And as over 4,000 years passed, the deity was nowhere. It was hiding in the Gopi Chandan, waiting for Madhvacharya to worship him. So many men could not lift this little deity. So Madhvacharya personally lifted it and put it on his shoulder and walked back to Udupi, composing beautiful verses in glorification of Udupi Krishna. And those verses to this day are chanted every day by the devout followers in the Madhva Sampradaya. He established the worship of Udupi Krishna so very, very devotionally. Punctuality, cleanliness, very, very authorized procedures, everything done with such devotion. And he made 8 of his principal disciples sannyasis, and instructed them to form their own mats. And they would be the only persons, the acharyas of the mat, that would worship those deities after him. That deity. So he preached how he and his disciples were preaching in Udupi. It's something historical. Was a revolution of Vaishnavism. He wanted to see Vedavyas again with some of his principal followers. They took that long walk from Udupi to Badrinath. On the way, many things happened. Should I tell a few? Or are you? You are sleepy. Some people are honest and you're saying, yes, we are asleep. One thing, there was a king. He was building lakes, digging lakes. And he had his soldiers. And any passerby, they would arrest them and force them to just help dig the lake. Hard manual labor. So Madhvacharya is coming with his sannyasi disciples. They're walking. And they get arrested by these soldiers and told to dig the lake. So Madhvacharya said, I want to meet your king. So he went to meet the king. And he preached to the king in such a way. He was so expert at charming people's hearts and convincing people's intelligence that by the time he finished talking to the king was digging the lake, and him and his disciples walked away. There was a river, and this river was the border between enemies. There was Muslims and Hindus that were having a very violent communal conflict. So there was no boats to cross the river. But you cannot get to Badrinath without crossing this river. The Muslims were on the other side. The Hindus were on this side. They said, you cannot cross. So Madhvacharya said, I'm crossing. And him and his disciples crossed. And the Muslim soldiers and the mob of people, they just came to attack him. And with fearless conviction, he said, I want to meet your king. So they brought him to the king, probably thinking he would be sentenced to death. He spoke so sweetly to that king that the king offered him a huge pot of land that he could be the king of if he just stays close by. Madhvacharya said, "I do not want anything except just to go to Badrikashram." So he was given permission to go. When they went into the jungles of Himalayas, a tiger jumped, just aggressively, just jumped right on Satyatirtha, his secretary. Satyatirtha, and Madhvacharya just came and just punched the tiger in the head and threw him away. Very easy. Satyatirtha looked, and they continued their journey. Then there was another little sannyasi, just a scholar, never gotten a fight in his life. He was walking, and a whole band of dacoits attacked him with swords to kill him. And Madhvacharya just told him, "Fight." He never fought in his life. So this little sannyasi just grabbed the sword out of one of their hands and killed the entire gang. Killed every one of them. Hare Krishna. This is empowerment. When they finally reached Badrikashram, of course, they all waited for him at the Badrinath temple, as he, Satyatirtha, didn't volunteer this next time. It was understood that only Gurudev can go to that place. So he went to Adi Badri, and there again he met Srila Veda Vyas. And there Veda Vyas gave him the permission to give commentary on Mahabharata as well as Vedanta Sutra. He gave his blessings to write his own commentary of Vedanta Sutra. Because in his preaching, even Achyuta Preksha, he was completely convinced in his heart and in his mind of Madhvacharya's teachings. But because there was not an authorized commentary of Vedanta Sutra to support it, according to tradition, he couldn't actually accept it formally. And there were many others like that too. So he received the empowered blessings of Vedavyas for Vedanta Sutra commentary. Vedavyas also gave him as a gift 8 Shalagram Shilas. After sitting at the lotus feet of his Guru Maharaj for many days and receiving these very auspicious blessings, Madhvacharya descended into the lower plains of the Himalayas. And as they were walking, he was reciting his commentary of Vedanta Sutra, and Satyatirtha was writing. One of the most treasured commentaries in the history of the Brahma Sutta. And it was written, they were walking through Himalayan jungles, and he was just speaking and writing. It was named the Purna Pragya Bhasya. When they came down again to Udupi, when Achyuta Preksha read his Bhasya of Vedanta, Achyuta Preksha became his disciple. The guru became the disciple of the disciple. Considering his relationship with Vedavyasa, it was quite appropriate. In In this way, Sripad Madhvacharya established the system of pure bhakti. He gave his 8 sannyasis 1 shalagram shila each. And in each of their mats in Udupi, that is the center, that is the focus. Their shalagram shila that was personally presented with the loving hands of Vedavyas to Madhvacharya. And the acharyas of each mat have been taking care of those sacred shilas for now approximately over 750 years. Madhvacharya preached extensively. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally, although he is Radha and Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the original personality of Godhead, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give something way beyond anybody has ever given before. Although it's in the Vedic literatures, he came to actually distribute Radharani's supreme love to the world, the love of Vrindavan. And although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not require any sampradaya, just to show the example for the world that true knowledge must be received through parampara. If he did not, then it would give people license to go to anybody who just speculates and creates anything, which is primarily what's happening today, especially in India. Somebody's charismatic, somebody's learned, someone can perform some magical tricks and we accept them. But then there's no standard. The Lord has established, if you want to know me as I am, evam parampara praptam, you must go through parampara. Therefore, the Supreme Lord Himself accepted humble service within parampara. In the Madhva Sampradaya, it was Madhavendra of Puri who was the avatar of a kalpa briksha tree from Goloka Vrindavan. He descended into this world. And he was the first in the line of Madhvacharya to reveal the ultimate treasure of Madhurya Ras, the sentiments of conjugal love of Brajbhumi. It's in Padma Purana. It's in Brahma Vaivarta Purana. It's in Srimad Bhagavat. It's in Narada Purana, Brahma Purana. It is there. And in the Nimbark Sampradaya, they have been following this from the beginning. But it was Madhvacharya who cleared the way by dismissing Mayavad. Without that, without clearing the way, how will anyone understand the sweet and higher rasas of Braj? So Madhavendra Puri accepted initiation in this sampradaya and revealed the highest ecstasies of love of God and gave to his disciples Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Charya, Paramananda Puri, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, Brahmananda Puri, so many great souls, Sri Rangapuri and Ishvara Puri, who the Lord became connected to in parampara. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach the fullest, most complete conclusions of the presentations of all the acharyas in the Achintya-bheda-bheda Siddhanta. And as the Yugavatar, he gave the method by which any sincere soul can easily perfect their lives through the congregational chanting of Krishna's holy name. And now it is 1:08, 11:08, which is an auspicious time to end class. I was waiting for an auspicious time. Let us pray at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and all of our great spiritual forefathers. And on today's very special occasion, let us pray at the feet of Sri Padmadvacharya for their blessings, that we may carry on to gain our great eternal inheritance of the treasure of love of God. And in a few minutes, when the Sunday feast begins, we will discuss about Ravana. And his relationship with Ramchandra. Srila Prabhupada ki.